All I can get is static or variations on the central musical rhythm.
I only wish there was some way we could tell it to shut up. It's driving me crazy. And it keeps getting louder.
We have no way of estimating the volume this creature can produce.
The only logical solution is to listen to CJSF 90.1 FM. They broadcast from Burnaby Mountain in British Columbia. Let's tune in now.
It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions.
For over four decades, Dr. Richard Moss has been a pioneer in the field of conscious living and transformational inquiry. He presents a simple framework for noticing how the mind constantly leaves the present moment by going into the past, the future, or making judgments of self and judgments of others. He suggests how these moments create and reinforce a false sense of self, a self built on fear, insufficiency, and habitual emotional reactions. Instead of getting lost in the stories our minds spin, he invites us to allow the mind to become quieter and more spacious, so that we can perceive more clearly and respond rather than react. Over time, this grounded presence becomes a kind of inner home, an embodied knowing that we are larger than any particular thought or emotion, and that we can return to this stable awareness again and again. This will be our quest today with my guest, Dr. Richard Moss. Richard Moss is a physician turned teacher who is an internationally respected pioneer in conscious living, inner transformation, and presence-centered spirituality. He has spent decades guiding individuals and groups worldwide to free themselves from limiting beliefs and encouraging awakened radical aliveness and cultivating conscious, evolving relationships as a path of spiritual growth. He's the author of many books, including Inside Out Healing, Transforming Your Life Through the Power of Presence, The Black Butterfly, An Invitation to Radical Aliveness, and The Mandala of Being, Discovering the Power of Awareness. So please join us for the next hour as we explore the practical advantage of living with awakened radical aliveness with our guest, Dr. Richard Moss. I'm speaking with Richard at his home by remote connection. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Richard, welcome.
Oh, thank you, Justine. That was wonderful to hear you do that. I was remembering back to when Michael was doing that.
Oh, for sure, for sure. We go back so many decades. And
we do.
And I'd love to begin with, just to help our listeners know something about your personal path, and you as a practicing physician and now a teacher of conscious living.
Sure. Well, I went into medicine because it's a way to bring well-being to people. But it was also, for me, not quite a fit. And in my mid-20s, as I was also being a doctor, I was rock climbing, and I was touching these amazing states of aliveness where the air is scintillating. And then one day in the emergency room, I was treating a really unwell person, and suddenly I was about to try to sedate him or have the nurse do it. Suddenly a voice said to me, "You have nothing to share with this man except love." And I just put my hand softly on the top of his head and my other hand over the bottom of his belly, just spontaneously, without thought. And I became blazing hot. And he fell deeply asleep. And when he woke up, he was okay. He was remarkable.
So this was without giving him a prescription?
Nothing at that point, in the emergency room. And so that experience, what kind of love was that voice talking about? And then after that, and before it too, but one experience after another, non-ordinary experiences, meeting people in amazing ways. And so I stepped out of medicine. And then when I was 30, just a few days after my birthday, I had an experience of what might be called fundamental realization, awakening. A black butterfly landed on my forehead, and suddenly I was one with existence in a peace that is indescribable and a understanding. So it opened a door to a new kind of consciousness, a profound change in myself. So my path since then was understanding it. 9 months after that, it happened again. Then I could feel energy, see energy, practically read people's minds, or certainly feel when their mind moved and changed their energy field. And I just began to teach. I began to lead these retreats with the goal of not educating people's thinking about themselves, but giving them direct experience of coming home to a deeper ground in themselves, where real sanity is and where you already are solving the problems your life has invited you to mature and evolve with. And I've never stopped.
Talking about the butterfly landing on your forehead, and we talk about, like, we go to gurus or people who are more enlightened, that they give something called Shaktipat or something, and they transfer the nature of mind or the nature of reality, and it happens in an instant. And then we still have to walk up the mountain of discovering, but that seems like that butterfly was a transference.
The butterfly was a radical change of consciousness. Before the butterfly, the assemblage point of my consciousness, the construction I lived out of, was essentially my ego. My self system, what I believed about myself, what I didn't understand that I believed about myself, what I reacted to, what I wanted, what I didn't want. Richard, you know, where almost everybody lives. But after the black butterfly, my consciousness was not rooted in Richard anymore. It was rooted in consciousness itself, which is a relationship. So suddenly I wasn't identified with my thoughts. I was beginning to have a relationship with them. And suddenly, with feelings, and of course, an awakening process brings tremendous change at an energetic level. And some of our listeners will have read about those kinds of things. And I describe it deeply in my book, The Black Butterfly. But the to have your consciousness assembled in awareness, in presence, and when you fall into identification with your thoughts, you suffer. When you fall into a resistance to a feeling, you suffer. And so you begin to become literate with feeling. You are not owned by your feelings. You're not owned by your mind. And you were talking about transmission. After that, not only was there the transmission in the sense of this moment as I'm talking, but there was a transmission, an emanation, and people fell into profound states of consciousness, and I didn't have to do anything, and I never have had to do anything. And it still happens, and people will find my books and find themselves just transported just by reading them. And now I've turned them into audiobooks, so they'll actually be able to hear my voice.
So, fantastic.
It's a new world. It's an extraordinary world. And as you said, you have to walk up the mountain. You have to do the work.
Yes.
As my wife says, you know, awakening, enlightenment, you know, doesn't end the ego. Now you have to turn around and look right at yourself and start the lifetime process of diffusion of your persona until there's no resistance between you and every moment of life.
Yeah, the ego is persistent.
Oh, dear, yes.
So you mentioned feeling, and I know that you make a very big distinction between feelings and emotions. So I'd love for you to describe that.
That's important. Thank you. we use these words so interchangeably that it becomes important to differentiate them. So feelings for me are what your direct connection to the present moment as your being, your felt sense of connection to the present moment. And so you could suddenly see a sunrise and just feel joy. You could be walking in the woods and drop into stillness. A child could giggle and you can't suppress a smile. I mean, there's a continuum of feeling like weather that never stops. And that goes down to sensations that are so profound, feelings that are indefinable, feelings that you couldn't name. You'd have to say, it's like I became one with all existence. It's like I was being dissolved and exploded into nothingness. You have to use simile. You can't describe that depth of feeling. But emotion, you already know it always. You can describe your emotion. And all emotions, in the way I'm using the word, are created by a thought. You have to have a story. You have to have a belief. You have to have a thought to create anger. You can't possibly experience jealousy without thought that churns on itself. There's no such thing as resentment without thought. You know, and these thoughts are judgmental. You know, you can be bitter with yourself because you're judging yourself. So emotion is created by thought, or there's an image. And before you even realize the image, you're reacting to the image. But you don't just react to the image. You react to the image through very quick thoughts that are already associations from earlier in life. A person will say, oh, I got angry, I wasn't thinking anything. But the stories that you're telling yourself that create the anger or the resentment or the bitterness, they're so already entrained in you that you know, you'll go to that. But just try to think about it. You know, what am I believing about myself the next time I feel disappointed in myself or angry at myself? You know, what am I believing about any person I'm reacting to? Because you're not reacting to them who they are. You're reacting to them by your judgments of them. And so we can learn to come back to the present moment and learn to distance ourselves from the thoughts. And the basic rule for that is if it closes your heart, it's not true.
Oh, no. You know, just last night, I had an experience. We're talking about feelings. And I was uncomfortable about something that happened. And I was talking to a dear friend, and she was questioning me about, well, what were you feeling about that? And what I noticed, Richard, is when a question like that is sincerely asked, I kind of drop down from my head. I actually feel it physically, of dropping down into my body. And the word that came to me was, oh, I don't feel safe enough. I feel too vulnerable and not safe. Mm-hmm. And then that caused me like, oh, I need to really look at all of that very deeply. But is that what you're talking about when we're talking about feelings that are, it's not a head thing. I didn't come up with, oh, I'm feeling this because she said that or he said that and this happened. It wasn't that. It was something else.
Well, you made that fundamental movement that you call dropping in. You turned your gaze into your body. And the body is a word, you know, which means one thing in medicine, but it's a space. It's the space of our being. And in that space, you have a felt sense. And you touched one of the most prevalent of all feelings, unsafety. It can become anxiety. We don't have to quibble about, is it anxiousness? Is it unsafety? Is it fear? They're all very similar. They are primary sensations that teach us about love. They are the sensations nobody wants to feel. And because we don't want to feel them, we try to make ourselves safe. We try to make ourselves safe with tools, with weapons, with argument, with philosophies, with dogma. I mean, but the simple sensation of being unsafe is, if you become literate with that sensation, that's the path to freedom from fear. When you realize you're anxious, feel it. You know, before you say, I'm anxious because that, then you're going into your head and trying to create a story that justifies the sensation. The sensation is in the now, And when the mind is quiet, there are no emotions like anger and resentment and bitterness. But when you drop in deeply and you say, wow, I feel unsafe. I feel too vulnerable to feel safe. That is such a blessed sensation, because it's asking us, if love ever said anything to humanity, it said, if you're my disciple, I'm going to ask you to experience feelings that are very, very difficult. And the more difficult they are, the more you'll know me. That's what she says, you know. And so what do you do when you feel unsafe? Feel it. Breathe. Breathe and soften. Breathe and soften. It's music. If you said, well, let's eliminate all the notes, you know, all the chordal patterns, all the tone poems that I don't like, you would have a superficial music. But we are cosmic beings, and we are many, many symphonies. And if we don't have the music of the abysmal, the music of the dark, the music of unsafety, the music of aloneness, if we don't have the music of grief, then we don't have deep music, and we are not going to ever be able to truly be sane and love one another. Because what is it that stops you from loving another? It's always going to be some form of vulnerability, some form of fear, some form of unsafety, right? And if you close your heart with your thoughts, then love is shut down. And so, yeah, the thing you did, that's the fundamental thing. You drop in, you go inside, you bring yourself to the internal landscape, and you feel it. You feel it. And then you relax. And relax isn't relax that feeling. It's relax resistance to it. And then you relax some more. And you relax some more. You become spacious and even more present in that sensation. And people think, well, you know, that's wallowing. But you're not wallowing in anything. Because what happens is every sensation, like fear, like unsafety, like aloneness, like and grief, it will start to move. It becomes living energy. And that energy becomes part of your emanation. It becomes part of the story your silence tells in your presence.
Well, that takes me to focused awareness or focused spaciousness. And those two words kind of seem just a position, but you put them together in a certain way. So what do you mean by focused spaciousness?
Well, I think at a level that most of our listeners will know, you know, when you really let go into the more familiar states of flow, or like when I said, I started rock climbing and I would touch these extraordinary states where the air was scintillating, that's a state where everything you perceive is vivid, right? Your sense of your own being is not a person, it's an aliveness. And there seems to be no limit on it. You know, I'd get to the top of a climb in those, you know, my 20s in Yosemite, and the air was, as I said, just scintillating. And nature was glorious. I mean, it's beautiful there. If you have eyes to see, it's beautiful. But when you have gone so deep into yourself, as something like rock climbing brings us to, then you know focused spaciousness. Then you know what it means to be completely ready but relaxed. You know, we've all been, well, I've been recently watching the Olympics. Not to date our time of conversation, but these athletes, they're young. And yet the most important thing they can learn to do is to be ready and relaxed, to be incredibly focused but relaxed, spacious, you know. And the more they contract into, will I win? Am I going to be able to do that? As long as the mind is moving like that, they won't have a good performance. There's the story of the woman who won the singles gold, 20-year-old American. I can't think of her name. I wish I could. I can see her vividly. Who at 17 had done extraordinarily and dropped out of all of it for 2.5 years and came back just for the simple joy of doing it. And you watched her performance and she was in a state of, I'm having fun with my life. Radical aliveness. Radical means to get to the root, you know. That's the primary meaning of radical. A tertiary, distant meaning is extreme politics, for example. No, radical means root. She was living in the root of aliveness, and she had freed up fear. She had freed up, if I fail, I lose a piece of self. If I don't win, she, that was gone. And that performance was just delicious. Not just it penetrated the viewer, it penetrated me. And she won a gold medal. She wasn't as technical as some of the other, but it was the combination of that liberated heart and this wonderfully practiced athleticism. She was glorious, beautiful.
Oh,
that's focused spaciousness. That's ready, relax. That's radically alive. That's our destiny. That's the call of every moment.
Beautifully, beautifully illustrated. Thank you. Richard, I would love, I know that you talk about three levels of intelligence. And so let's talk about those three levels, because at the top, you put something that might surprise people. So talk about those three levels.
All right, beautiful. The path of deepening in consciousness can be stated this way: happy body, spacious feeling, clear mind. The most intelligent part of us is the body. Okay, and that is the intelligence of 15 billion years of evolution. That links you to everything that ever lived, every chemical reaction that was there, that was the necessity of life. It leads you back into the very birth of our universe. Every single cell of your body is intelligent and has a relationship to every other cell of your body. And so your body never lies. Your body never lies. If you have a thought that's untrue, it will make you anxious or angry, and your body will register it in a blink, right? So the first level of intelligence is take care of your body. But that doesn't mean the narcissistic nonsense that goes on in gyms or the extreme sport thing to try to break through to some other state of consciousness. Taking care of your body is listening to it moment by moment. Being really connected to how your hands are moving when you're doing the dishes. You know, being aware, I'm in this body and I'll never have it again. And taking your spiritual practice and embodying it, visualizing every time you come into a state of well-being or clarity, that state's going to carry you for the rest of that day. I only do my spiritual practice for one day. The second level of intent, you know, one day, today, it's going to carry me through anything and everything that life happens to bring today. And the ordinary and the surprises, pleasant and not always pleasant. The second level of intelligence is feeling. You know, an amoeba, if it starts to move into water that gets too hot, turns around and comes back. If the water's a little too acidic, turns around. How does it know that, right? It feels it. It senses it, okay? And life has been, for billions of years, feeling what is right, what is not right. Your felt sense of yourself is going to bring you to an intimacy with yourself that's profound and limitless. You'll never arrive at the end of it. But the more literate you become with your feelings, that is, that you actually can experience them before they chase you into thinking, before you try to put words on them. I mean, this is the most fundamental work of any sitting practice. Once the mind's quiet, now the next level of reality, the next level of intelligence, and I'm talking about the storytelling mind, because as soon as that's quiet and you come into deeper feeling, now you have a new level of mind that receives intuitive understanding. And, you know, it's so when you ground deeper in the body into feeling, that activates intelligence. And then finally, the most youthful and less developed intelligence is our thinking. It's a few hundred thousand years old. And unfortunately with that, thought can rationalize atrocity. Thought can create the idea that we need data centers everywhere. Data centers are like metastatic cancers. Wherever they go, they pollute water. Wherever they go, they suck energy. And because they create noise, and because they pollute water, and because they suck energy, they weaken every human being in their vicinity, and they're sprouting everywhere. It's just exactly what a metastatic cancer does. It goes to some part of your body, and it says to the body, make the chemicals I want, feed me what I want, I'm not going to ever die, and cancer is the eternal cell, right? And in human beings, greed is like an eternal belief. Progress in the terms of technological expansion is another form of, it's instinctual behavior as far as I'm concerned. We're instinctually innovators. We have big brains with hands, and we mess the world up. Whales have bigger brains, more densely interconnected neurons by that criteria, more intelligent than we are, and they never had hands. So we don't know what their intelligence is, but that's a whole other story. Because that day the black butterfly landed, I went to the coast. I took a walk an hour or so later, and there below me, circling in the water about 20 yards offshore, I was up on those bluffs, but you look down right into the water, it was a whale, right? And about 200 yards offshore, 200-300 yards, was a whaling boat, whale-watching boat. And the wake of the whale-watching boat came straight from the horizon. That whale probably heard me, felt me, whatever, when the black butterfly landed and started swimming right to me. And we met. And I've never, ever disconnected from what that consciousness was. And it's part of why the literacy with feeling... the supercomputers are beginning to show us that whales have more vowels. We have five vowels. They have more, which means their way of communicating anything and everything is infinitely more subtle. Just add one more vowel and think about to us and think about how many more words you would make and what those words might signify. There is a consciousness and an intelligence on planet Earth that we are a piece of, and not the greatest of. And if you can't stop innovating, if you can't stop manipulating, well, isn't that instinctual behavior? This is something I want to just shake up the hubris of this insanity of high tech.
Yeah. Well, I want to remind our listeners, I'm speaking with Dr. Richard Moss, physician turned teacher and author of many books of transformation and consciousness, including The Mandala of Being, Discovering the Power of Awareness. And to learn more about his work and his many offerings, including a community of fellow seekers of radical aliveness, go to richardmoss.com. That's richardmoss, MOSS.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website at newdimensions.org. Well, you'll find over 2,000 programs in our archive. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions.
If you are inspired by this dialogue, please consider supporting trustworthy independent media with a donation or membership at newdimensions.org.
I'm speaking with Dr. Richard Moss, physician turned teacher and author of many books of transformation and consciousness, including The Mandala of Being, Discovering the Power of Awareness. So, Richard, I'd love to talk about the mandala approach to presence and emotional clarity. So what do you mean by the mandala approach?
When you start to read and think and talk about consciousness, We hear the story of duality, you know, and the non-dual. And dualistic thinking just means there's me, and there's you. There's the experience and the experiencer.